The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Ancient Warfare Answers. With me today is Murray Dom, the assistant editor of Ancient Warfare Magazine, and I am Jasper Orthuis. I'm the editor of the magazine. And today we are answering a question from Jay Soth, and he wants to know, how is all the intense cavalry action possible in ancient history? The Thessalian diamond formation charge, companion cavalry, Numidian light cavalry, and all of that without the use of the stirrup or more modern saddle technology. If it's all with rope or cord and thigh gripping, then they must have had some seriously chiseled legs. Well, all the legs on all the sculptures chiseled, but by definition, I suppose. But Murray maybe has a better answer than that one.
I think chiseled is probably right, but also our understanding of what the ancients could achieve with the saddles that they had is, academics for a long time considered that they wouldn't be able to achieve a great deal with a saddle that wasn't stirruped or wasn't a modern saddle. And we think now that, in fact, they were probably highly capable of all sorts of actions on such saddles without stirrups, whether it be gripping with the thighs or, when you look at Native American horse riding or any culture that hasn't used the stirrup, they evolve into very, very capable cavalrymen. The types of actions that cavalry required early on, of course, the Greek cavalry are a very sort of small force. We aren't sure with the whether hoplites originally rode to battle and then dismounted to fight as cavalry, whether the image that you get in the Iliad of even with chariots, they're basically a battle taxi. There's still debate as to whether that's a real picture or not. And so the idea, of course, that actual cavalry, which survive in the Hippias and in Rome, you've got the equites classes, so it's a wealth class, wealthy enough to be able to afford horses. That stays in both cultures, which become predominantly heavy infantry based. And so those people who remain cavalry are very small in number, and also the sort of actions that cavalry are required to do, we tend to think are scouting, reconnaissance, sometimes mixing it up with other cavalry forces on the battlefield, but that they would always be melee, not sort of intense melee, but sort of missile fire, so whether it be javelins or horse archers, and, that they sort of scout around the edges, and then, of course, they chase down fleeing enemies. Most of the archaeological depictions of cavalry show them with swords. They tend to be unarmored. They also tend to be not wearing helmets, and they also tend to be not using shields. So most of the archaeological depictions of cavalry are unarmored horsemen with swords and javelins or spears. So they're not suited for intense battle. When that starts to come in, and we think that intense cavalry battle starts to come in just prior to the age of Alexander, so that Alexander and his cavalry are charging home, as it was, in the Battle of Gaugamela and Issus and Granicus. So, with the Roman cavalry as well, you've got the same sort of thing. You've got the equites there. And again, the numbers of cavalry involved in the legions are very small. Roman cavalry is notorious, as we've discussed in an earlier issue. Roman cavalry is notoriously has a very bad reputation. And even when Rome comes across good cavalry forces, such as those from Numidia, they again are light skirmishing cavalry who fly around the flanks and fire missiles and then flee enemies who are running away. And, you know, even Julius Caesar is using Numidian cavalry in Gaul and in the civil wars. So that sort of what cavalry did is not what we picture cavalry doing. The picture of heavy cavalry charging home, which we'll look at in a sort of a separate question, isn't what the cavalry of the sort of the classical period, both in terms of the Greek hoplite and the Roman legion, the middle Republican legions, that's not what cavalry did. They were certainly a source of status and wealth, and symbols of those things. But on the battlefield, their role was less. What's the word? It's interesting because I'm thinking Alcibiades. See, Alcibiades at the Battle of Delium, he's on horseback. So he's part of the Athenian cavalry at the Battle of Delium. So there's still status to being a cavalryman. And we have these fabulous tombstones of Greek cavalry and Athenian cavalry. But it's not the mainstay of either Greek or Roman warfare. So it's an interesting sort of double-edged sword. On the one hand, it's status and wealth, and on the other, it's like, yes, but you're not really the main thrust of our armed forces, are you?
Well,
what do you think, Jasper?
You know, I always just, for me, it's natural to go to the Romans, and then they do develop, I think they nick from Celtic cavalry an improved saddle that does, as reenactors have attested, allow for a much safer seat, which allows Roman cavalry from, what's that? I think it's pretty comes in the very late Republican period to do all kinds of maneuvers and tactical evolutions in a apparently fairly comfortably and easy without stirrups. They're still mostly not, head-on shock cavalry. Most Roman cavalry just uses javelins. Although later on, of course, they adopt some of the cataphract cavalry from the east. And it can become a large army, and a late Roman army, of course, they become very important. But then you're talking hundreds of years after this question, the period that this question is about, really.
Yeah, well, you got the four-horned saddle, haven't you?
Yes, exactly. That's the saddle that comes in.
You've later got what they call the step saddle. That comes in too through the
yes.
through the Gothic tribes again, and we think that might be in the second and third centuries even. And again, it's tricky because a lot of the Gothic cavalry, the victory at Adrianople is essentially achieved by missile cavalry who surround the Roman legions at Adrianople. So it's by then there are heavy cavalry. You know, they're taken from the Sarmatians and the Sassanid Persians, and you've got the cataphracts and the clibinarii, but you've also still got cavalry who are light, skirmishing, missile-firing raiders.
Yeah, it's the contrast is kind of interesting if you think about it. By the time that the improved saddles come in, and presumably it's an easier seat and easier to ride, most of the cavalry is skirmishing cavalry, while especially the Macedonian cavalry that we think of, the companion cavalry, Sarissaphoroi and cavalrymen like that are apparently armed with thrusting spears, but have to do this indeed with strong thighs.
No. I was agreeing indeed with the strong thighs.
All right. Well, I think we'll leave it at that. See you next time.
We'll leave it on strong Greek thighs.
Yes. Chiseled thighs.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.